This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
What's for dinner? Are you going to have twisted animals from corporate mega barns, maybe? Or pesticide-laced vegetables picked by underpaid field slaves? And I want to ask, who is going to grow your food once the old generation of farmers die off and maybe the barns collapse?
Well, according to the census data, the last census, there were only 3% of farmers under the age of 35. And this most recent census that just came in, it said 6% of farmers under the age of 35. Of course, less than 2% of the American population are farming.
Thankfully, there is a green revolution starting out on the land near where you live. Let's dig in with the new greenhorns. I learned about our next guest from an excellent article posted at grist.org by Eric Hoffner, coordinator of the Orion Grassroots Network. He's a frequent contributor to Orion Magazine. I'm going to steal shamelessly from Eric's knowledge and homework as we chat with Severn Von Scharner Fleming. She's a young farmer and filmmaker at the center of a new movement to grow, well, more young farmers. Severn, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
Well, you've got a new film, a radio show, and an organization all called Greenhorns. Why the name, and what does it mean to you?
Well, greenhorns are, what it really means is a new entrant or an inexperienced practitioner. So many of us who are new to farming and excited about it, we're kind of like the greenhorns on the old Wild West. And we're excited, and so we're tooting our own horns a little bit to show how proud we are of what we're doing.
How did you start your connection to the land? Are you from a farming family?
I was raised in the city. Both of my parents are urban planners, so studying cities and living in cities. But we spent every summer on a farm in my family. And then as soon as I got to college, I, with a friend of mine, was part of a really fabulous college farm project, and we started up that farm and planted what ended up being hundreds of fruit trees and building beds and composting the food scraps from the college, and pretty soon found ourselves organizing harvest festivals and music festivals and just doing a lot of organizing to keep that farm going. And so pretty much ever since then, I've been farming every summer and organizing a lot of educational, celebrational type events pretty much for the last 10 years now.
And that was in Pomona, California, I guess.
That was at Pomona College in Claremont, California.
Right, okay.
A great place to grow guavas.
Well, this is really important. I want to tune into this for a second because around here at the University of Victoria in Canada, hundreds of students just took out a campus lawn in front of the library and they planted food and edible landscaping. And then, of course, the university blindly bulldozed those beautiful raised beds, but the students vow they're going to return and replant. It's kind of a guerrilla farming, and in my opinion, it's way overdue. Why do you think schools can be so hostile to food knowledge, and are there hopeful signs of a turnaround?
I think there are hopeful signs of a turnaround, and you see that with some of the primo liberal arts and elite Ivy League type colleges really competing to be the place for sustainable food, Yale and Williams College, and those types of places are really starting to pay attention to local food for their dining halls and to the interests of their students, many, many, many of whom are really interested in food systems work, both in farming and in the kind of more wonky sides and policy sides of this major challenge that we face. I don't quite understand why the schools are so threatened by young people building an institution around something that they cherish and creating a green space for others to enjoy. I wish that they would change their tune and support the young people who are engaging in that way. And, you know, because it really is a lot of work to build a garden and build a farm from scratch. It's not every college student who works up the enthusiasm to get anything off the ground, let alone a farm. So I would encourage those students to just keep at it. We at Pomona College had quite a long fight, and there were some bulldozers involved at one point, and they wanted to put a soccer field down, and you just have to rally the community, but that's a good skill. That's a good skill to have, to learn how to rally your community and cherish the relationships that make possible a new institution. So I think it's always a good lesson for the students, and hopefully one day the universities will understand, and then at Pomona College, they ended up putting the the farm on the admissions tour because they were so proud of it at the end. So I'd say keep your chin up.
That's beautiful. Well, most of the population doesn't know how to grow food, and a lot of people don't even have a clue where food comes from. How can we reintroduce institutions which reward and honor agriculture?
Well, I think just speaking from the perspective of someone who's really deep in the community of young farmers and every day around people and communicating with people who are making their lives in farming, I would say that it starts with the individual and it starts with the individual's commitment, and that we young people have incredible opportunities right now to go and learn in our summer holidays if we're young, or if we're out of school, to go and sign up for a year or 2 years of service and apprenticeship with someone who already knows what they're doing and to get trained up. I think that the institutions do exist thanks to some of our elders who made the organic farming movement what it is today, and who started these wonderful sustainable agriculture conferences and bodies all around this country. I think we can just tap into those networks and start with ourselves and not worry too much about very much else. I think we just have to learn what there is to learn and attack where there's a vulnerable spot in the system. And I think that these students who pounce on lawns and guerrilla style it are acting out of, it's a good sense what they're doing.
Can you tell us about your own experiments with farming in the last couple of seasons?
Totally. So I went to the Pomona College and we started that farm, and then I went around, I got a round the world ticket, and I woofed. And woofing is a very nice program, it's international, and basically you can go and work willingly on organic farms, and that's what woof is, working willingly on organic farms, and basically you just work for them, and then you can stay with them and they feed you. So it's a really great way to travel inexpensively, and to meet people in the countries that you're traveling through, and to see the countryside, to experience all different kinds of agriculture, and see where your particular sensibilities take you. Some of us are animal people, and some of us are plant people or flower people or, you know, tree people. And really just exposing yourself to the many different kinds of farming that there are, and the many different social and physical configurations of agriculture is incredibly valuable, especially at the beginning of your agricultural career. So I did the woofing, and then I signed up for season-long apprenticeship at a biodynamic farm in California and worked there with CSA and flower production and apples and goats. And then I went back to school and got a degree at UC Berkeley in agroecology, which is basically the ecology of agriculture. Then I got out of school and I started my own farm. And every summer I would go off and work on, when I was in school, every summer I would go off and work on dairies in Switzerland, because I'm definitely a cow type of person. And the Swiss are really good with dairy. I don't know if you've noticed, but the Swiss cheeses are the best cheeses. So I went and made cheese, different kinds of cheese. I'm in the valleys and high up in the elevations, working with different scales of farms, some who brought their milk to a cheese maker, some who made the cheese in their own little hut. And then we started our own farm, and it went okay, but we lost our land. And this coming season, I'm going to go work for another young farmer who's a great friend of mine and a fabulous entrepreneur in Connecticut. So pretty much I'm still at the very beginning of my agricultural career and have been spending a lot of the time organizing as well as farming. But I think that organizing and farming go pretty well together, because you have to get a lot of things organized to get a farm off the ground. So I'd say it's pretty good practice.
Yeah, and my own experience in trying to sort of part-time farm in northern Canada, we had to have community. You just couldn't do it on your own, especially when harvest time comes. You need a lot of people in hands, or if you want to put up a barn, or you know, you need people's help all the time. Well, look, there's a lot of new tools available that weren't available to me for communicating smaller-scale farming techniques. Maybe we could start with your new film. Could you tell us about that?
Sure. There's so many tools available, and I, you know, certainly it's hard to start from scratch, and certainly it's hard to go it alone, and I think there's no need to, especially now when we have such a rich digital realm and there's so many people out and about communicating and providing resources for people interested to engage in this work. So if you are such a person interested to engage in this work, I would say one place you might want to start looking is on our website, and to see our, we have a short film up there, which is just a kind of a teaser for our final film, which is going to hopefully be done by the end of the summer. We also have a weekly radio show, which is every week another young farmer interview from all around the country talking about what they do and why they do it and the practicalities of their day-to-day living and their vision for how their work will enhance the sustainability of their food system. And so that's available on a podcast, so you can even upload it into your iPod or whatever. And then we have a guidebook, which is freely downloadable, and then it is, in fact, bigger than just a guidebook. It's actually a wiki. So if you know of resources that aren't in there, you can even upload new things into it. So in that way, it's participatory. But that guidebook basically covers a lot of introductory ground, helping you think through your professional trajectory, helping you to get a sense of the institutional matrix that exists to serve you as a young person in agriculture. You know, the fact that there are conferences and apprenticeships that you ought to consider learning a little bit casually first, but then committing to a farm and really engaging in a longer-term educational experience, kind of coaching you through that process as you start to consider your own career in farming and learning all that you need to know to plan that career.
And what is that web address?
Oh, yeah, the web address is www.thegreenhorns.net. And you can also link from there. We have a whole bunch of buttons on the homepage that you can just navigate all these different programs. It's a lot more linear than when I describe it. But we have a blog also there, and which is basically like a rolling newsletter, and every day there's videos and announcements about events relevant to young farmers and news relevant to young farmers, parties, conferences, job opportunities, land opportunities, apprenticeships, paid farm manager positions, you know, pretty much just information that's relevant to young farmers. And that blog is now getting almost 1,000 hits a day on average, which means that if you have something to share with other folks and you want to spread the news with the community, you're welcome to email us and tell us what you want to announce so we can put it on the blog. So in every way, we're trying to communicate and create space for communication within and among the young farmer community using digital tools, mostly because that's what we can afford to use as a very small nonprofit, mostly based out of our homes and from a pretty far-flung network of volunteers. We can use these digital tools to create infrastructure for ourselves in a way that we probably couldn't have 10 years ago, and in a way that is pretty amazing because we can reach really, really far, and most of the software that we're using is free. So pretty much if somebody else wanted to do what we're doing in another field, or if they wanted to do more of what we're doing in our field, they could do it too.
Wow, those are a lot of resources. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking young farmers with Severin von Scharner Fleming from thegreenhorns.net. Severin, I'm a little concerned people will stop at the barrier of actually doing something. They may feel satisfied they've learned something on the computer. Maybe they'll apply it later if they have to. In my experience, it just does take years of practice. So you've given us some tips already, but is there some way to, I mean, is it worthwhile to just start growing something at home, or even see if you can get some backyard chickens going, or just start?
Yeah, people are always saying that chickens are like the gateway drug into self-sufficiency. Because once you start having those eggs on your table, and you taste the difference, and you start to have a relationship with that funny little clucky lady on your lawn, things start to change pretty fast inside your head, and it can end up causing some more significant changes in your life. I think it is a challenge to pop into action and move from theory into practice, but from what I've seen, people are doing it all the time, and what they need is help moving from that first gesture and that first impulse and that first action to a sustained series of actions that will continue to support them personally and socially and culturally and professionally so that they can keep being brave and bold and doing what's right for themselves and their community. The first step is hard, and, you know, showing up at the local, you know, ag meeting when there is one, or lecture when there is one, or potluck dinner is obviously the first step, and just showing up and talking about what you want to do or what you are doing or what other people are doing is incredibly important. But then I think it really behooves us all of us who care about this food system and care about our land that we live nearby and the water that flows through it and our community, if we have the capacity to support young people who are farming or to support people who are starting new businesses that are about sustainable local food, you know, that we can do things that will help those people in their lives. So, you know, if it's you who's going to make a decision to start a farm or go and sign up for an apprenticeship on a farm or work for an organic food business or take that action in your own life, it's incredibly valuable. But there's so much room for others who are busy with a lot of other things to support, and to support with their dollars, but also to support with their time and show up to the events and, you know, do the communicating and facilitating and massaging that our community needs in order for these kinds of enterprises to work. So I think depending on what time frame you have and what your ambitions are, you know, there's room for everybody.
I was really kind of inspired by your Greenhorn radio chat with Tim of Common Ground Farm. For those who don't know, could you tell us about community-supported agriculture, what that is?
Oh, yes. Tim is so wonderful. Community-supported agriculture, which is also known as CSA. CSA has been around not that long, but it's been tremendously successful as a model. In the model, the community, a.k.a. the eaters, a.k.a. the consumers, spend the money up front. They invest in the farmer in the spring, and then the farmer, their whole summer, gives them every week a box of vegetables from the farm. So essentially, the consumers are prepaying the farmer for the food, but as a consequence of that prepayment, the farmer has money in the spring to buy seeds, to buy inputs, to repair machinery and capitalize their farm slightly in anticipation of the season. And then they have a reliable marketplace for their product. So it just takes the drama and the hustle out of growing, and it allows especially young people who wouldn't necessarily have the financial stability in their lives to front such a large amount of thousands of dollars in the beginning of the season and wait around hoping that someone's going to buy the produce later on. It really can allow people who wouldn't be able to farm and just start off small and a manageable size and grow at an organic pace rather than at the pace dictated by the bank. So in that way, the community is kind of like the farmer's bank.
And that might be another way into access for the land for the many of us who don't inherit a working farm. We've got to have some way of getting to the land to do this adventure.
Yes, and many CSAs are wonderful in that they require a certain amount of service from their community members. And one wonderful thing about the CSAs is, and their popularity is that there's waiting lists practically at every CSA, people just really wanting to be a part of this community and wanting to get access to really the freshest food that they can get. This is food that's picked, you know, usually on the day or the day before, at the prime of its ripeness, and just picked especially for you and waiting without being jostled too much in your little box. And so because there's such a waiting list and such a demand, it establishes a very positive, in my mind, reciprocity between the eater and the farmer. And so because the farmer wants to grow, but the eater also really wants to eat. So in a sense, they're reaching their hands out across the table as equal partners in that exchange. So lots of farmers in that new kind of social relationship are inviting those eaters onto their farm to harvest. Many CSAs have you-pick sections where the CSA members are going to pick their own strawberries or raspberries or blackberries just because that's one of the things that is most labor-intensive in the height of July. And then with that comes access to the farmer and access to the farm. And in many instances, people are volunteering one day every other week or one day a month, and a lot of CSAs are finding that members of their community are delivering boxes to other checkpoints or getting involved in helping with accounting or getting involved in learning about the animals on the farm. And so there's just a whole another level of engagement that's possible once you become a member of a community like that.
So it's a hotbed for human development as well as the plants and animals that might be there. You also talked with Eric Hoffner about the Drake Forum on Beginning Farmers held in Washington, D.C. in early March 2010. What was happening there?
Well, that was really exciting. I mean, so in Washington, D.C., this was almost a month ago now, there was a two-day-long forum hosted by Drake University, which is a ag law center in Iowa. And they were interested to convene a kind of a national conversation about the beginning farmer issue. Now, you mentioned in your introduction, and those familiar with the young farmer and beginning farmer issues will know that the average American farmer is 57 years old. And according to the Iowa Farm Poll, 42% of those farmers are interested to retire in the next 5 years. So we're essentially facing a pretty dire crisis of attrition, where farmers are just, there's less and less of them, and they're older and older, and they deserve to retire. You're not supposed to have to work until you croak. So the Drake Forum was organized essentially to inform the USDA staffers and policymakers in Washington, D.C. about this very important issue and to bring into one place all the voices who have relevant insight and experience and a programmatic history and educational history and training history with beginning farmers. So that whole forum is actually available in podcast form, and it's linked from our blog. So if you go to our blog, you can listen also on your iPod to the various sessions, and it was just dense with information about farm workers and new immigrant farmers and urban farming, the difficulties that folks are facing getting loans for farm startups, some wonderful farmers talking about their success and their business really thriving, and then some farmers talking about the challenges that they faced getting access to land. That's a wonderful compilation of voices on this subject, and really a fantastic place to have it and to convene that conversation with such a service to the movement and to our community of practitioners. You know, those of us who are engaged in this kind of thinking, you know, we don't always have the chance to be in the same room with each other and to see on each other's faces the commitment that we have. You know, it was wonderful to hear everyone, but it was really wonderful to see everyone there and just to realize what a strong team of forceful and optimistic people we all are.
Well, against the stereotype that you kind of alluded to, people think that farmers may be old people who are in boots and maybe dressed badly, and now you and your friends come along and make this all cool. Is that working?
Well, according to the census data, the last census, there were only 3% of farmers under the age of 35. And this most recent census that just came in, it said 6% of farmers under the age of 35. So still, we are a super minority. You know, of course, less than 2% of the American population are farming. So, you know, we're a minority of a minority of a minority. However, we're a growing minority, and we're a fierce minority, and we're every day more and more of us. So really, it's an issue of needing to scale up the level of support that we provide, the level of training that we provide, the level of cultural support for this professional decision that we do really need many, many more young people to make, so that we can continue to double and redouble and redouble our numbers and really build the businesses and the farm businesses and the food businesses that it's going to take to feed the next generation of Americans healthy food. Because really, that's what it's about, is one farm at a time and one lunchbox at a time, getting local food, local healthy food to the table for our kids.
You've given us some really good stuff here, and I want to say to listeners, if you want to get active in food or find people who are doing it, start out at www.thegreenhorns.net. You can also find links there where the film is coming out or listen to Greenhorns Radio and just learn how to get going. I'd like to thank Eric Hoffner for the tip about this and Severn Vaughn Sharner Fleming for sharing her enthusiasm with us today. Thank you, Severn.
Well, thank you so much, Alex. I look forward to listening to the rest of your program.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.